Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the official podcast for the Baseball Prospectus local site for the White Sox, BP South Side. And I'm Nick Schaefer here in rainy New York, speaking to a special guest to preview the first series of the 2016 season. I'm here with David Weirs. Hi, David.
How's it going, Nick? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. It's as strange as it sounds, given that it's your dealing with snow at the moment, that we have real baseball coming up really soon.
Thank goodness. I'm pretty excited for it. Soccer is my number two sport, but I think baseball is, it's like 1-1A for me. I'll say it that way.
Oh,
So.
I didn't realize it was that close. I mean, I've seen your
Oh, yeah.
so David, for those of you who don't know, David is an excellent follow on Twitter at David Weirs, and he is an Oakland Athletics expert, or I am declaring him as such, and that's the excuse to get a chance to chat with David today. And you can catch his work over at TechGraphs. On is that that's a I guess a subdivision of FanGraphs. Is that?
That's the even nerdier side of Fangraphs, believe it or not. That's where we look at kind of the crossroads of technology and sports and those two developing worlds together.
Well, there you go. I definitely recommend checking it out on Twitter, especially if you're into soccer as well as baseball, because I know I learned things from David on both fronts. But for now, though, you're the enemy, I guess, because we're gonna be facing off in about 48 hours, something like that.
Yeah, just a matter of days. It's doubly awkward because I live in Chicago. So when I get to wear some casual stuff to work, every once in a while I wear Oakland A's stuff. And yesterday I actually wore an Alberto Callaspo Oakland A's hero tee, and that raised a number of eyebrows and a couple other digits, believe it or not. So, well,
No, really?
it's just kind of funny because some White Sox fans are bitter. Because we didn't beat the Royals in that wild card game. And they went on to obviously, do quite well in the postseason in 14 and obviously won it all last year in 2015. And it's like it's partially the A's fault, and then it gets deflected to me. And I'm like, look, man, I'm more upset about that than you are. Like, trust me on that. But I get it. It's a division rivalry thing, so I understand.
Oh, that's actually really well. I'm kind of proud that their objections are at least that specific and grounded in like an actual event, not just not White Sox. I'm or Cubs. I'm gonna yell at you. But we were actually recording a podcast as that wild card game was going on, and you can listen to us being like smug and horrible about it as Oakland was way ahead, and then
Yeah,
just
we were
saying
up by
like.
six runs. Yeah, that was fun.
And then as the comeback was happening, all of us going, oh, no way. So that's funny that you bring that up. Yeah, and that you're in Chicago when almost none of our staff is. So, but hey, it's 2016, the modern baseball fan. And you guys have a few guys who used to be our guys, and they actually might, I mean, Semien is still your everyday starting shortstop? Is that just going to continue onward?
I don't want to say he can't get worse defensively because obviously, I mean, there's always room for more failure. It's the Oakland A's, let's get that clear. But I do think that he takes a step forward both offensively and defensively this year, and it shouldn't have been even like a competition because we don't have another shortstop that's close, really. I mean, obviously Franklin Barreto is kind of the main position player in our, farm, but he's minimum a year away. And Semien, I'll be honest, I like his game. I think he's a better than average player, and it just people get caught up on errors, and errors aren't perfect, of course, but some of his fielding errors were pretty inexcusable at the big league level. But Ron Washington came in and he really, really improved his game.
Yeah,
So.
it's I read that his, results improved significantly after Washington had a chance to work with him for a couple of months, and I guess it can be dangerous to attribute, a second half performance to some sort of causal relationship of a change. But I mean, I guess it wouldn't be the first time, a coach worked with a young player and got some meaningful improvement. So I'm definitely interested to see how much we should regret parting with Semien. I'm kind of missing Chris Bassett pretty badly right now.
I really enjoy watching him. I think he might average 95 on his fastball this year, and that's just fun to watch with the starter. Obviously, there's command and control issues that we, need to address, but I think his slider's pretty decent as well. I wish he would use it more. But yeah, Bassett could be a fun guy because honestly, after Gray in the rotation, it's like cross your fingers and hope for a rain out because there's nothing but question marks after Sonny Gray. And to be frank, Sonny Gray might not be an A come July, so or at least August. So
Oh, so are
you
you?
never know.
Yeah, because obviously he's had two, Gray has had two collectively like very strong years. He does have he's a shorter starting pitcher, which I know gives a lot of people pause in terms of long-term durability. And he did seem to fade down the stretch. I wasn't watching every Sonny Gray start. I don't know if could if there was like visible fatigue or if there was actually something going wrong or if it was just one of those things.
He started off just in the stratosphere as far as just like getting fortunate as far as balls in play, home run rate, surrender rate, that sort of thing. So that was bound to regress. And I think his kind of slow, quote unquote, September was a mix of him just coming back down to earth and just getting a little worn down as the season progressed. Because, like you said, he's not particularly tall. He's kind of in like the Tim Hudson mold of pitchers where they're not real tall, but they're still, a quality starter. I mean, I wouldn't say they're like Tim Lincecum, so tiny, but you know
Right.
what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But
And oh, so.
I do think that Gray can continue at a very high level, and he's extremely cheap. Like he's not even ARB eligible this year. So including this year, he has 4 years of cost control ahead. So if we were gonna rebuild the farm and I would like that to happen, then I think Gray is the place to turn for that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah, because I wanted to sort of ask in terms of, obviously I want to we'll talk about the I think it's a I need to check. It's a three game set, I think, coming up, correct? Is it? It's not. And so, speaking about those matchups, obviously Gray and Sale is going to be a really cool opening day matchup. They're both really fun pitchers. And then moving further down, because like you said, after Gray, it's less clear for Oakland. But since you brought it up, I mean, what do you see for Oakland this year? I mean, the obviously there's some good teams in that division. Oakland's, I think, been generally considered to be the weak link, but I don't think it's. I mean, this isn't the type of last place team where you're like, they're gonna lose. This isn't a Phillies or Braves situation for this year. I mean, would it be the craziest thing if they competed?
I think there's two sides to this coin to play the political game, if you whatever you want to call it. Because if we keep everyone and don't move any assets for future value, then I could, if everything breaks right, and by that I mean Rich Hill doesn't, go down for 6 months, which is obviously iffy. If all of our young starters improve, if Valencia proves he's real, like there's a long list of things that need to go right, but I could see us sneaking into a wild card game.
Yeah, the
That
back
said,
half of the rotation is like shaky, but then you're looking around at, yeah, there aren't a ton of stars here, but they're, I don't know, the bullpen looks good. You got a lot of guys who can be average to above average players at a lot of places, and sometimes that works out really well. But obviously you don't have as much margin for error if you don't have those elite guys dragging up the mean production.
it's kind of coincidental that I'm on a White Sox podcast because I feel like we're taking the opposite approach of what the White Sox have done recently, where there's like a roto team of like starters and scrubs, and ours is just like 2 to 3, 3.5, 4 WAR upside players like all over the field. Like the only black hole really in the last couple of years is like second base, and hopefully Lowry and now Coughlin actually can maybe pin that down and be at least league average.
Yeah, it's I don't know, man. You if the argument may be for Oakland's success could be that they're doing the opposite of what the White Sox do. I mean, that could be a good formula.
Well, you guys have a World Series ring in the past, 15 years, and the A's just keep sputtering in the playoffs, so
I think one of our writers was like 8 years old when they won the World Series, which is both a comment on how long ago it was and on Ethan's age, but
I think that was 2005, correct? Yeah, it was
yes.
05. Yeah, that is when I was a senior in high school. I graduated in 2005, so
Oh,
man.
same. Okay. So, yeah, it's no, it's definitely still, I guess, recent, certainly compared to some other fan bases, and Lord knows you guys have had so much playoff disappointment over the years, and it's so hard when the sample keeps growing of just like horrible, crushing disappointment in the first round of the playoffs to attribute it to, you know, keep saying, oh, it's probably just a fluke, it's probably just luck, but I feel like humans don't want to accept that. You want to attribute some sort of reason to it.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, my background is, you know, unsurprisingly with numbers and objectivity, but there after like from like 2000 to 2004, when the A's barely missed the playoffs by one game, basically, the second to last day of the season, we lost to the Angels, and that clinched them a playoff spot and us not one, basically. It was just spirit breaking because by then Moneyball came out, and then the fallout happened. And then obviously when the A's couldn't get past the first round, they're like, oh, well, it doesn't work in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. And then 2006 happened. We went to the Twins. Zito outdueled Santana when Santana wasn't peak Santana, but his changeup was still nasty, of course. And we swept the Twins. And then we promptly got swept by the Tigers in the ALCS. And it's just like really just one step forward, two steps back. And again, anything can happen in a small sample size of, you know, a 5 or 7 game series. But yeah, the frustration has certainly mounted over the past, I don't know, lifetime for me.
Well, yeah, and then by the way, that 2006 division series against the Twins is actually one of my favorite memories of baseball, even though it's Oakland. I mean, I've always been fond of the A's, certainly for, you know, given they're not the team that I root for. But Frank Thomas crushing two home runs off of Johan Santana was very cathartic for me as a teenage White Sox fan.
Frank, I remember fondly watching Frank Thomas just destroy people, and then I think if he would have stayed healthy, he could have been a top 15 hitter all time. He was that impressive to me back then. Part of it might just be, you know, like as a kid, just looking back and like, wow, he had obviously prodigious power and control and took a walk. But the more I look at the numbers, I'm like, yeah, he was on the trajectory of being just an all-timer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm crazy biased as far as that goes, but man, I was he had that really, you know, I never expected to see him in another uniform, and I was like, man,
Sure.
if they're cutting bait with him, I mean, is he done? And then he obviously still had some juice left, because that was he had a really, really good year, and not too easy to hit in park there.
Yeah.
So for
I
you
want to
guys
say he
now,
bopped 39 dingers for us. I might be off by a couple, but 39 sounds right off
I
the top
think.
of my head.
I remember him. He finished like top five in MVP voting that year, right? Am I crazy? I'm gonna have to look up and I have to click past the other Frank Thomas on Baseball Reference. And yeah, he was fourth in MVP voting with 39 dingers.
39. Go.
He was the man.
He was a lot of fun that year, no doubt.
And one last thing on memory lane too. It's just the for Oakland, I feel like there's always some sort of kind of like extra fluky twist of the knife to you guys getting knocked out too. There's always like this extra layer of like unfairness. Like I think there was a Red Sox series where it was like one of the worst calls of all time at like third base. I can't remember all the details of, and that was maybe 2003 or 2002 or something like that. And Oakland being the higher seed against Detroit, but having to like play the first two games on the road, and then you have like you're down 0-2 and you get to face Verlander or something. Like that was it's always just like something goes wrong for Oakland, and I'm always so devastated on their behalf. But
I'm glad you didn't bring up the Jeter flip because that's usually the first thing people go to for like the A's wheels falling off. And it's like, well, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the iconic moment where, you know, Jeremy Giambi doesn't slide and Jeter makes that little bare hand flip to home to tag him out. And it's just, that's always like the one. So I appreciate you not doing that to me.
Oh, well, I mean, we all know that the divine intervention of Derek Jeter has nothing to do with flukiness or luck. I mean, that's just
Another somewhat, I wouldn't say funny story, because none of my stories are really funny per se, but I was actually raised in Kalamazoo, and that's of course where Derek Jeter played baseball for growing up. He's born in New Jersey, but his family moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I went to the same high school as Derek Jeter, obviously much later, but the record hall is just Jeter across the board, basically, for baseball. It's hilarious to see his name in the record books there.
Jeez.
But there was no shortage of like Yankees fans, and obviously at the height of the, I don't want to be grandiose in saying this, but of the A's Yankees rivalry, because that's a bit of a stretch, but I think it's kind of fair because we met in playoffs numerous times.
Sure.
like I would just get destroyed by my Yankees friends. And then obviously, growing up in Michigan, there were a lot of Tigers fans. So when 2012 and 2013 happened, I got destroyed by them. And
Oh
it's just like I can't win, and neither can the A's. And it's just so spirit crushing.
Oh
But
well, I'm like, I think I am a little bit more optimistic than just filing them away as like a last place team this year. And that because I think they're a little underrated, I'm thinking, hey, they might come through. But saying that, they're underrated, they might win like 81 games instead of 75, but doesn't necessarily move the needle that much. And like you said, so you think that they're in a position where they should hit the reset button on whatever it is they're building now.
absolutely, yes. This might just be my cynical A's side, or sardonic, whatever you'd like to call it at this point, but I think it's time to really, really blow it up. Honestly, I wish we traded Vogt in June of last year when his value was sky high, before he went, regressed. We could have traded him to Arizona for a hilarious package back then, if only we had known. If only we'd known.
Was there
But
a leak of a specific trade proposal that came out, or just generally that Arizona is ripe for the plucking?
It's just kind of like, you know what? I think that we would honestly do pretty well, because that's before like Wellington Castillo, or yeah, Wellington Castillo went nuts for them and hit
Right.
like 17 home runs in like a 6 week span for them. And even earlier this offseason, I was thinking, you know what? The Rangers were looking for catching help, and they were looking for a starter. And both Vogt and Gray have 4 more years of cost control each, including 2016. And I would happily take like Mazzara plus other pieces off of their hands in exchange for Sonny Gray and Steven Vogt. I would pull the trigger on that every day and twice on Sunday. But it, like I said, I think if everything goes right, we can sneak in the playoffs with like an 86 win, 87 win wild card spot. But if we start trading people, we're gonna be in a not fun place. We're gonna struggle to win like 73 games if we start trading everyone. And there's people here who are kind of interesting as far as lots of future value or not a ton of future value. Because as I already mentioned, both Vogt and Gray have 4 more years of cost control. No problem. Chris Davis is in his final pre-arb year, so he has 4 more years. And I know he hasn't played a game for us that matters yet, but I'd be more than happy to flip Davis. I was not happy to trade away Jacob Nottingham for Chris Davis.
Yeah, because I was going to say that runs a little counter to what you were hoping for. You were hoping for them to restock, and Davis is more of a, I mean, he does have 4 years of control, like you said, but that is more of a win now sort of move, unless they think that Nottingham is sort of this is as valuable as he's going to get.
I'm not entirely convinced Nottingham sticks behind the plate, because he's a big guy behind catcher. He's a really big guy. And not to say that, tall, big guys can't catch, but it is quite rare to see someone his size stay back there. But even then, he projects to be, I would say right now he's got to be, what, a top 75 prospect?
I think that's about where he's shaking out. I know that it's definitely when it happened, when the trade went down, the reaction that I was hearing from people was, like Nottingham is a real get for Milwaukee. And Milwaukee's apparently generally done a very good job of reloading the farm system in the last year or so. But I don't have a top 100 list immediately at my disposal. But yeah, Nottingham's like a definitely a real bat for
I
sure.
mean, if we knock him for, potentially moving off, catcher, which it's hard for me to do so until he actually proves he can't catch. If he gets moved to a corner outfield or first base, then sure, knock him down to a top 100, top 125, whatever your threshold may be. But it was just a move that was like, why are we buying major league players when the major league team isn't that great? And like, don't get me started on the Billy Butler 3 years, 30 million. I went nuts when that deal was announced. I wanted to flip desks over last year when I was just like, why?
I mean, he's
Obviously, the A's front office is infinitely smarter than I am, and they have access to much more data, but I think that was the front office. I
Thanks,
think
guy.
this being just a little too cute. That's what I think.
Hey, he doesn't turn 30 for another couple weeks, man. I don't know what you're so upset about.
Because bad body DHs in their 30s are always a good bet.
I know. I mean, I guess that's to Bean's credit, he's obviously willing to he doesn't just hold to conventional wisdom, and then that I think that, I guess that's the real message of Moneyball, is just finding value where you can get it. And he must have seen something there, and maybe it, you know, he's willing to take risks, and this one clearly didn't pan out. But I guess that's the nice thing about having someone who's in charge, who is so flexible and willing to be decisive and take chances and risk them blowing up in his face. Because like you said, you know, if Oakland hits, if everything works out, and you know, like, let's say Minaya comes up, and I definitely want to give you a chance to get excited about Sean Minaya on the podcast. But like, let's say you know, the rotation holds up, Rich Hill hangs in there, and Bassett hangs in there, and like Minaya comes up, and you've got a solid rotation behind Gray, and then you've got all your like solid average to above average players hanging in there and staying healthy, and you're competing. You know, Bean is willing to like add at the deadline to take a chance, or if they're clearly out of it, he's not scared to sell guys off either. So, you got a lot of potential outcomes here. But I watched Minaya pitch in spring training, and I've been hearing about him for forever. And he was the was he the only return on Zobrist, or was there a second piece that came back?
I think there was also a player to be named later in that, but Manaea was the I was blown away when we got Sean Manaea for what was basically like 13 and a half weeks of Ben Zobrist. And Zobrist is great, don't get me wrong. I love Zobrist, but Manaea could be outstanding. Like, I think he could be number two in our rotation today. And I know he was just sent down. That's fine. They're probably playing, you know, the cost control game. Don't make him a super two, et cetera, et cetera. But I think he has three pitches that all grade out at above average to plus. I think he could be special. Yeah.
I was really excited when he was traded, because I'm really glad that he's not on the Royals anymore, and I can just enjoy him without reservation. But yeah, he threw a slider that I was watching, and I'm trying to remember who the batter was. It was to a righty. He backfooted it, and it just looked like so cruel. It was like this savage, like two plane. It had like two plane movement. It was this crazy slider. So, I mean, if he's health was the only knock on him, right? And it wasn't like arm issues. I don't think it was the same body part injured twice. I think it
It's
was.
just been a series of, like, I don't want to say fluke injuries, because at a certain point, health does become a skill. But it's a lot of, like, pulled muscles, strains, lats, groins. Like, they're just things that I think should be avoidable with good training or good training staff. And the A's training staff is, that's a tale for another day. That's one for when we're in person having a beer or two, because I have thoughts about their training staff as
Oh,
well.
really?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't have a ton of concern for Manaea as of right now, but that also might be part of it. They are kind of like, well, you know, he's never really pitched that much. Like, last year was his second pro year, and he didn't even top 100 innings.
Right.
So they're being very, very careful, and they're probably kind of looking across the side or looking across the room to, you know, Jared Parker, who just went down again with another elbow surgery.
Oh, that's so sad. I feel terrible for Jared Parker. That's got to be so
Two
frustrating and.
Tommy Johns, a broken arm, and now another operation in his elbow. And just, yeah, poor Parker. Just poor guy. Can't catch a break. But.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, and I was going to turn to just looking at the depth chart here, too. I mean, like, Sean Doolittle's another guy who's insanely talented. I mean, relievers don't impact the roster quite as much, but I mean, he was posting some pretty elite numbers before he started down this a while of injuries now. I mean, is he all ready to go and 100%, or is 100% as he's going to be to start the season?
He claims to be, so we have to take it at face value as far as that goes. And if even if he, you know, struggles, stumbles, whatever you'd like to call it, then honestly, the A's bullpen is much better than years past. I don't fully trust it, because even though there's a lot of strikeout potential, there's also a lot of injury potential. Like, Ryan Madsen was our big free agent get this offseason. Yeah, and you have no idea how sad it is for me to say that.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Austin Jackson was ours.
Touche.
But point
But
taken.
Madsen didn't pitch for 3 years. He comes back, lights out with the Royals, and then we ink him to a 3-year deal. It's just like, well, you know, and like, we have John Axford, who's been all over the place with is control. We have Liam Hendricks from Toronto, who absolutely pumps gas and I love, but he's still a fairly, like, I don't want to say young, because I want to say he's 27 already, but
Feels
he's
like he's been around
largely,
forever, but
yeah, he's largely unproven in my humble estimation. And he's another guy who's not particularly tall, if memory serves. So just kind of like, if our top four arms go down, and the guys I just named, then our bullpen's in the same spot as it was last year, which is to say, no bueno.
Yeah, and the fallback arms that you might normally turn to, Chris Bassett's a guy who people have thought might be a reliever, but you can't pull. I mean, you need him for the rotation, so you can't like pull him out and like help the bullpen with that. Yeah, Hendricks is really interesting because like I said, it feels like he's been around forever. I guess he came up with the Twins. I mean, he's already been a bunch of organizations, but you're right. He just turned 27, and he was incredible last year, but he's 1 year removed away from just being like hot garbage for forever. So like I'm open to the idea that he's turned a corner and he's figured something out, because the stuff is there, like you said. But yeah, there's reason there's risk on all of these guys, for sure. Axford's another guy who's had his ups and downs as well. But yeah, so I mean, are the White Sox, I guess they're fortunate that they don't have to travel in the middle of the season out to the West Coast to Oakland. I know that that was a huge problem. I think there was, I don't know if Oakland fans registered this, but there was a while, even when the White Sox were good in like the early 2000s, and where I think they were like 2-50 or something like that in Oakland for like over the course of a number of years. I can't remember the exact number. Maybe it was 2-300. It was really bad. It was like, and so maybe it's good to just like they're gonna be in San Diego this weekend, like they can take their leisurely time and they won't be all jet lagged or whatever. But like you said, you're starting at the beginning of the season. I guess Minaya's going to be in the minors, so that's a plus for the White Sox. But you are Sonny Gray is on the roster at the moment. He hasn't been traded like you hoped for. So I don't know. I'm curious. I mean, predicting three baseball games is the definition of insanity. But like, you've got Gray and Sale. That's just going to be really exciting, I think.
That game's gonna take 1 hour and 20 minutes. Like, they're just gonna mow the other lineups down.
Well,
Like,
I don't know if it goes 0-0 into the 12th or whatever, then
that's true.
But then after that, I'm trying to, is it actually, is Oakland just going to run, is Bassett going to be starting game two? Is that,
I think it'll be Rich Hill, assuming Hill is healthy,
oh, okay, because
which is I mean, it's Rich Hill. Like, he was our second biggest free agent signing this year, and again, he was basically out of organized baseball for a stretch before having like a lights out four start stint with the Red Sox last year.
yeah,
Like,
that's not the biggest. You're a numbers guy. Is that a big sample or is that?
most would say it's not a large sample. Yes.
Okay, yeah, I've got it up here. It's going to be Sale versus Gray, Quintana versus Hill, and Rodon versus Bassett. So all your righties are going to be in the lineup for all three games, it looks like. Oh, I'm sorry, it's a four game set. There's
Oh.
Latos and Graveman is scheduled for Thursday.
That
So.
game's gonna take 4 hours, so
Yeah. Yeah, is Graveman just like, I have him organized in my mind as like the definition of a fifth starter. Is that fair or?
I think that's his floor. I do think that his sinker, as good as it is, like, it's 93, it's got late life, it's a really, really good pitch. He's got a cutter, but both his cutter and change are like below average as far as whiff rates go in their individual pitches. And this is me kind of theory crafting or whatever you'd like to call it at this point, but I think it's because pitcher or hitters can like get into a certain count and they're like, well, obviously he's gonna throw a changeup now. So the changeup isn't perfectly placed with perfect command and perfect movement, it's gonna go, 350 feet, or it's gonna go 400 feet, or it's just gonna go really, really far, and hopefully, it doesn't go for a home run as an A's fan. Because he's just, I don't want to say he's over-reliant, because his sinker is his best pitch, and you want to, you don't want to get beat with your not best pitch if you're a pitcher, basically. But I think, again, Graveman, if everything goes right, and that's like the 98th percentile projection for the whole season, then yeah, I think he'd be like a four starter on like an average play, maybe even a playoff team. But until he really develops his second and third pitch, then I think, yeah, five starter is about right. Because he's just a sinker baller, basically. And that's not a knock on him, but there's room for improvement. I'll say it that way.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was really expecting, if you just asked me without me paying attention, I would have expected Jesse Hahn to make the rotation. But maybe I just, he was good for me in fantasy for San Diego like 2 years ago, and I just disproportionately enjoy Jesse Hahn. Is it just going to be Billy Burns full time? I mean, I'm just looking at this depth chart. Is it just going to be Billy Burns full time in center?
It's got to be. Fold might get some time. People are talking, oh yeah, Crisp might take some time in center. Crisp can't play center field anymore. I really don't think he can. So Burns, if Burns gets fewer than like 600 plate appearances, I'll be sorely disappointed because he should definitely be like the leadoff guy or at least be handed the center field job. Like I wouldn't mind Coughlin hitting leadoff, but maybe that's just me.
He's definitely, I mean, Burns is definitely an entertaining, like, just, you know, from watching a game standpoint, he's definitely fun to watch. So, and I'm looking at the lineup and I'm trying to make sense of, like, are you worried about the defense at all? Because I can see an argument to think, you know, like, the infield's going to, like, muddle through and the outfield defense could be good. I mean, if you got Burns and Reddick are both solid out there. What are your thoughts there?
The left side of the infield keeps me up at night. Valencia is another guy who kind of took a step forward last year, but I'm not entirely convinced that he can handle third base for like 140 games. He's not going to be like Mark Reynolds bad. Don't get me wrong there, but he could be like, I don't know, Miguel Cabrera levels of just like poor range but good arm type. And with Semien, as we kind of both discussed earlier, like Semien definitely does have questions with his glove, despite the second half improvements. Then there might be some high BABIPs for the A staff this year.
Yeah, I mean, and that park is huge, so there's a lot of ground to cover. But yeah, I'm now that I the theme that seems to be emerging here is you guys are like, I guess you're rolling the dice on a lot of guys who have had these you know, small sample mini breakouts, you know, in terms of like Valencia. I like didn't realize until I took a second look at him that he had put together, you know, a really nice complete season. Because in my head, he's just this sort of waiver wire platoon bat. That's like what he had been, and he's obviously he's not like it's not like he's 35 or anything like that. But definitely, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if last year is his career year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
And I don't know anything about Mark Canha. Does Coughlin kind of push him out of regular of meaningful playing time? I don't know a thing about him.
I don't think the Coughlin acquisition did. I think the Yonder Alonso thing does, because Canha should have been our first baseman from the get-go, I think, because that's another guy who had really, really good power last year. He had okay rates as far as, you know, strikeouts and walks, that sort of thing. Nothing inspiring, but nothing awful. And I was like, okay, you know, give him 550 plate appearances in 2016 and let's see what Canha can do. Because he had power throughout the minors. Like, he crushed, I want to say, 20 homers in the minors in 2 different years. And that's a relatively rare feat. But it's just kind of like, well, sorry, Canha, I guess you're going to get some of plate appearances at first, maybe some in left, some as DH, because Lord help me if Butler and Crisp DH together. Like I said, there's a lot of things that could go right, but at its core, as you alluded to earlier, we're pushing our chips in to the table, to use a poker analogy, and I don't think we have the best hand right now. I think we're on like a straight draw, and someone is sitting on trips right now, so they've got a made hand, and we're chasing. We're praying and banking on the river right now. That's the best way I can put it. Which is all the more reason to just blow it up and start over.
I guess what happens is you maybe to keep the poker analogy going, yeah, you want to see one more card before you fold. Or Sam Fold, I guess, in this case. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. There's no filter between the idea and my mouth. I guess, you know, God, I'm so excited for real baseball and happy to speak about, and I've been talking about the same White Sox roster pretty much all offseason, and it's so exciting to talk about a different team and hear a new voice on this. But I think I'm going to start moving things to a conclusion so you can shovel your driveway. but do you like to that end, how do you see the American League like shaking out this year? I mean, I've been debating back and forth with people, you know, in the AL West is it like going to be Houston? Is it going to be the Rangers? And you know, the AL Central to me is like just this total mess. So like, can you, what's your take?
I think the AL West is going to be the Astros by 8 games.
Oh,
I
that
think,
much.
yeah, I don't think it's terribly close, really. I think they are heads and shoulders above the Rangers and the Angels and the Mariners, and they're like 9 heads and shoulders above us right now. As far as your division goes, I think Cleveland, I think they'll score enough runs to get by, because I look at the rotation and I just like, man, that would be fun to watch, I think. But it might be kind of overhyped at this point, because I know Fangraphs, we did our staff picks, and a lot of us picked the Indians. Like, a few guys did pick your squad, but overall, it's just like, it was a pretty even mix between, like, Cleveland was the number one, and then some Kansas City, some Detroit, with like some sprinklings in of the White Sox. But I think Boston out east as well is going to be a really, really good team. But that's kind of how I see things shaking out. Oh, I did pick Chris Sale as a AL Cy Young, so
Hey, I
your
like
fans
that.
can't your fans and listeners can't hate me too much. I mean, they can hate me the normal amount that everyone else hates me. How about
Oh,
that?
please. I don't think I mean, I can't speak for all White Sox fans, but I think we'd be surprised by success at this point. I mean, this is probably the best this is the most optimistic I've felt about a roster at this point in the spring as I have in a while. Even in like 2012, it felt like a when they did fine, they competed all the way down to the end. It felt like a really flawed roster, and this roster is flawed too, but there are fewer just like disaster positions, at least at a glance. I don't have any spot on here where there isn't a position where I'd be like, oh yeah, they're going to be 30th in MLB like with a bullet, like they have for the last several years. For a long time, that's kind of become a tradition. So shoring up the back end of the roster is definitely the story of the offseason for me here.
Yeah, just going from like below average to league average for you guys was math. Like, I think Lowry's gonna have a great year for you. I really do.
Oh, geez, I haven't even asked you. Yeah, you're familiar. He's your guy. You know Brett Lowry. So, like, what? How do you think he's going to handle second base? I mean, it's so strange. He seems so athletic and like he should be able to crush it, and he just hasn't. But I guess he hasn't really had a regular chance out there in a while.
He's kind of gotten moved around a little bit defensively. Like, obviously, I was like, I think his natural position is third base. That's, I wouldn't say inarguable, but you guys have a little guy called Todd Frazier there, so I think third base is pretty well handled for you.
We have two third basemen now. It's amazing. We haven't had one in like 10 years.
I was gonna say, when was the last time you had like a legitimate third baseman? Like, oh man.
He's managing the team, or I guess Joe Creed.
Joe
But
Creed had a couple good years in there.
he did. He definitely did.
I'm not entirely convinced Lowry has good footwork at second base yet. There are definitely times where it's like, what are you doing with your lower half as far as like defensively? Because I think he just uses his arm to get him out of trouble, because he's got the third baseman arm. So he's like, oh, I don't need to worry about, stepping into this throw. I can just come across the bag and whip it across my body. And it's just kind of like, well, you're not like Robinson Cano, who can do like, the casual like sidearm at 88 miles an hour across the field. Like, he doesn't have that good of an arm. And I do think there's going to be a couple defensive gaffes as far as a league average for second baseman probably would turn that double play or would have been quicker to beat that throw, that sort of thing. But I think he can be all right at it. Maybe a tick below average at second, which that's not going to hurt you, I don't think.
Sure, I think his bat. I mean, moving out of Oakland, I mean, I guess he played in Toronto too previously, but I'd to think that he'd get a little boost in his raw stats just moving from
Yeah, as far as fantasy stats go, I'd be disappointed if he didn't go like 20 home runs with like, I'd say a 265 to 270 average. I think he's gonna be mixed league relevant. I'll say it that way, if you want to take a fantasy angle on it.
Sure. I mean, it's been so long since there's been more than like two fantasy relevant players on the team. It's a welcome change. I'm like, you're making a fresh look at Cleveland too. I'm not surprised. I think Pecota has them as the division winner, in the Central. But they did just move Trevor Bauer to the bullpen, which like totally caught me off guard. And is interesting to that they're going with Anderson and Tomlin both ahead of Bauer. At this stage, because I thought he was like a real X factor for that rotation, but we'll see. It's going to be really interesting. I mean, Do you want to just for kicks? Do you want to have a prediction for how this Oakland series, Oakland White Sox series, is going to go before we break?
Ooh, well, I mean, Sale's inarguably a better pitcher than Gray, so,
Gray's awfully good. I mean, given the, I mean, like, Gray versus the White Sox lineups that I'm used to is like a recipe for a massacre. So, like, I mean, they're better. They've got two more credible major leaguers than they had last year in the lineup,
Well, don't quote
but
me on this, but I think last year was the first year in something like 9 seasons, maybe 10 seasons, that the A's won on opening day.
oh.
Well, generally speaking, like, we played in Japan once,
Right.
and which was kind of odd, and then we came back and played more spring training games, then started the season again, and there's some weird funkiness there. But normally we faced off against Felix.
Oh,
So,
okay. Yeah, well, that'll do
yeah,
it.
I
I
mean,
mean,
for like 6 years in a row, he just destroyed us because it's Felix, and who doesn't he destroy?
now you get
But
Sale.
yeah, but last year we won. We won against the Rangers in opening day. It was incredible.
Oh, there you go.
It was like it was like clinching a playoff spot. Like, A's fans everywhere were celebrating. Like, it was fun. But I think this is going to be the start of another losing streak. I could see us like scratching one run, maybe two, in like the seventh inning, but I don't think it's going to be a particularly fun time. It's not like I'm not going to watch, of course,
Right.
but if we split, I would be happy. I'll say it
Is
that way.
I just yeah, I mean, looking at it, the White Sox have like all lefties plus Leitos. I mean, periodically they run into guys like Ryan Rayburn is like, it's like prime Manny Ramirez against the White Sox for whatever reason. I'm like looking at Oakland's roster and like trying to, or I had it up a second ago, in terms of like their lefty mashing options, and I'm like getting a little,
Fegley is awesome against lefties. I think he can do real well. So,
Fegley and Reddick, I guess, is there, and
well, Reddick will probably sit versus left. Well, at least he'll
yeah.
probably play against Sale, but Reddick is a platoon player. Vogt doesn't do real great against lefties either.
Valencia should. That's
Yeah,
his like.
Valencia destroys lefties. He crushes them. Yeah.
So I don't know. You guys, all you need is a couple dingers, and you're in business. But David, this has been really fun. It's getting me. I'm like, this is the even though I'm looking out the window and it's gross here and it's even grosser out there. I'm like, wow, it's actually finally here after like a whole winter of begging for right fielders and getting Austin Jackson in like the end of March. But Austin Jackson's better than Avisail Garcia, so here we are. And thank you so much for giving up your Saturday morning to chat with me a bit. And is there anything you any closing remark you want to make, or your Twitter handle is God, I just typed David and it pops up on my thing now. But it's David Weirs, WIERS, for everybody who's I definitely a recommended follow if you guys want to branch out of your little White Sox Twitter bubble. but yeah.
The only parting words I would have is for any opposing general managers: Sonny Gray is great. Stephen Vogt is outstanding. If you're looking for 1 year rentals, and if we can't sell you in the long term, then guess what? The A's have that as well. Reddick is a free agent next year. Coughlin's a free agent next year. If you need a loogie help, we have Scrabble, aka Rzeszkensky, who I still can't get his name right. We've
Zepchinski?
is that it,
I
really?
think it's Zepchinski, but I mean, what do I know? I don't.
I mean, I'm fairly well known for being awful with names, so there's that. Well, if I'm known for anything, that is. But just saying, come down to the Oakland A's Emporium. We've got anything you may want. Just we can haggle prices with prospects for international draft slot money. We'll work with you. We've got options. Be a part of your own rebuild as you're a part of ours.
Man, all right. So yeah, that's definitely. I'll make sure to contact all the GMs who regularly
I know
listen to
you're
our
on all their
podcast.
short list for sources and contacts, so,
Yeah,
phone in a solid for me, Nick. I'd appreciate
it's
that.
the biggest problem in my life is having to like fight off all the GMs who are trying to talk to me. It's like really annoying. I'm like, guys, I'm trying to take out the garbage. I don't have
Come
time
on,
to.
I got a life here, guys. Give me a break. Give me a break.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, David. I had a blast, and I'm very excited to get this to our listeners.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course.